All right, welcome everybody to this lecture. Today's theme is service design, and I will be also talking to you about customer experience. I'm Tiina Kemppainen. Currently, I'm working as a project researcher in the IT department, but I'm also doing my PhD studies in the School of Business and Economics. Here's a little bit of background information about myself. My background is in marketing, but also in design. I started with marketing studies, and then after that I did some design studies, and then I kind of returned to marketing, which I'm also doing at the moment. My doctoral thesis is about the formation of customer service experience, so that's the theme topic that I'm working on at the moment, and maybe if I'm lucky, I will be able to defend my thesis next year. But in the IT department, I'm at the moment working in two research projects called Gateway to Mercury Business, in which I have a role of a service designer. And then we also have this project Trip, where we do research on e-commerce and online consumption. So this is my background. So a little bit of marketing and a little bit of design. But in terms of service design, I think these two fields, they go pretty much together. So in that sense, I think it's a rather nice combination. Here are some companies where I have previously worked, where I have done some kind of design work. I think IKEA is maybe the most famous one. I was doing how do you say it in English? Like store design. We did those displays that you can see in the stores. And in the current project, these are the companies that we are working with in service design matters. But anyway, that's a little introduction about myself. And this is what is this lecture about. First, I'm going to tell you about services a little bit. Then we will move to service design and why do we need service design in the first place. And in the latter part of this lecture, I will show you some common methods and tools that you can actually use when you do service design. Of course, you have to remember that 1.5 hours is a rather short time that I could be talking about this topic for like 3 weeks. But I tried to pick up some themes that you should know about service design. And I think you should consider this lecture as like introductory to service design and customer experience as well. All right. Here are the main sources of this presentation. So in case you become interested of service design, there are three books over here. These are kind of practical ones, but like very easy to read and they have some nice examples and so on, so I can recommend those. This is a bit more research-focused, so maybe a little bit harder to understand, but it's a good book anyway. And then, of course, this Touchpoint magazine, it's like the, I would say it's the number one journal of service design. So they also have like nice case examples and so on. So if you want to know what's going on in the field of service design, this Touchpoint magazine is perhaps something that you should read occasionally. But so I think we can move to the topic. So as we all know, today we live in a world full of different services. As you can see in this picture, a simple service as massage, there can be like tons of variations. There can be oil massage, foot massage, aroma massage, whatever. And in a sense, services, they are around us in that level that we may not even notice that we have so many services around us. We have beauty services, healthcare, food, communication, entertainment, travel, transportation, whatever you could ever imagine. And I would argue that all of you have been using some kind of service already today, and multiple services actually. If not anything else, you have been maybe using water or electricity or something like that. So we cannot avoid services today. But when we start to think that what is actually a service, if you had to define it, it maybe becomes a bit more difficult to say what is actually a service. And also what does it mean to design a service also? Before you can design a service, you have to understand what it means. So I picked up some definitions from the internet. So as you can see, there are multiple ways to say what is service actually about. Some consider services as actions of helping or doing work for someone. They can be also performances, processes, behavior, interaction between service user and service provider. Some consider services as a set of usable operations and tools or systems that supply some kind of public need, for instance. And to some, services are the ability to produce value for customer. So there are many kinds of definitions. But no matter what the definition is, you always have to remember that services are always immaterial. So you cannot actually touch a service. They are something that we cannot see or own. Services are always performed in some level and are always also produced and consumed at the same time. In marketing, this is the traditional way of seeing services. So they have been kind of compared to goods. So whereas goods are material, services are something different. And of course, you have to remember these things when you start designing services. Of course, the execution of some service, it needs some material components, but the service itself, it doesn't result in any ownership, like if you buy a chair, for instance. But this is just like introduction to this topic, but it's always good to remember this difference, for instance. So, why do we have different services then? Why do people want to buy different services? Of course, the idea in the background is that services, they provide customers or users. At this point, you should consider that I'm talking about customers today for the most part, because I'm from the marketing and we normally talk about customers, but of course you can talk about users or maybe consumers also. So it doesn't matter which term you use, but we are basically talking about human beings anyway. So the services, they provide some kind of value and benefits to people. Depending on the service, it can be time savings, easiness, comfort, entertainment, health, whatever. So basically what services are doing, they are providing solutions to people's everyday problems. So that's the basic idea. If the service doesn't help anybody in any way, then it's a useless service. So that's one thing to keep in mind when you design services. So in a nutshell, service design is nothing but producing solutions to existing problems and creating value for customers or users. So first of all, we have a problem. And then in the middle, we have all these service design actions and tools and methods that you use. And in the end, you produce some kind of solution to a problem. The old I would like to call this old-fashioned way. Maybe some people don't agree, but the old-fashioned way to produce goods and maybe also services to the market was, of course, that you first created some kind of solution. You had like some kind of superior product or something like that, and then you tried to sell it to the customers, and because of that you needed to do some selling activities and so on. But in service design, this arrow here, it goes from to the other direction. I'm sorry, I'm looking here. That is this recording actually working? Yes, I think so. It is giving me some notes here. Maybe I just close it. Yes, but anyway, in a nutshell, service design is about finding a right problem and solve it in a right way. So because of this, this field has a strong foundation in everyday life and like real situations and problems. Of course, it means also adopting a customer-led, outside-in perspective, as I just said. And then also, it's about using various methods and tools in order to make intangible services visible. As I said before, services are something that you cannot see, so when you design them, you have to make them somehow visible. So, in practice, service design is about planning and organizing service elements. So, basically what you need in order to make the service happen, those kinds of elements. They can be people, infrastructure, some communication materials, physical materials, or technology. And of course, you are doing this in order to maximize the service quality. And as the services are something that you cannot see, you have to somehow visualize the service, how it goes. Oftentimes, we talk about processes and elements inside the process, and you can look at this process from the customer perspective, but also from the provider's perspective. But I will, in the latter part of this lecture, I will discuss this also. So, if we put it in short, service design is about designing the customer experience. Of course, experience is always something personal and subjective, so for instance, about this lecture, you will all have your own experience, but with service design, we can try to make the service a certain kind. And of course, you can use service design for improving some existing services, or then when you want to create some new services. Of course, the other goal is to Yes, the first goal of service design is, of course, creating valuable functional services for everyday life. And how can you do this? Of course, you have to understand the life of people. So service design aims at exposing what is really relevant to customers, users, or consumers, however you want to call them. Other aim is to expose pain points and needs. For instance, if you use a certain service, what are the critical moments during the usage process? So when you can locate these kind of pain points, you can improve those parts and improve the service as well. Of course, one goal is seeing the business through customers' eyes. I think companies very often they are focused on their own views on things, so they kind of get sidetracked. That they have been perhaps doing the same thing for 20 years, and it's maybe hard to understand that what we are actually doing might look totally different if you look it from the different perspective. And of course, the fourth point here is that we need to identify key customer drivers that impact customer behavior, so that we can make the services serve the customers well. And of course, every time when you do service design, you have to remember that a design isn't finished until somebody's using it. So if you lack the customer understanding, it might be that nobody wants to use your service, and then you can never reach this goal. The other goal is, of course, finding ways to achieve business objectives that are customer-centric. Nobody wants to do services for fun. Of course, you always have some agenda for providing some kind of service. So when you want to reach some business objectives, they can be, for instance, savings. You can use service design to, for instance, try to, when you have to lower costs to serve existing and new customers, when you want to find some new ways to execute the service. Of course, you can aim for satisfaction and level of adaption, for instance. So when you improve your service, you might get more satisfied customers and so on. And of course, if you improve customer service experience, you are able to build better customer relationships at the same time, at least hopefully. And then reduce some irritation points during the customer journey to prevent service failures, the moments when something goes totally wrong and the customer gets very, very upset. Of course, service design can be also used for creating new services or sales or business opportunities. And when you're developing something new, like products and some innovation, you can use these methods to aim that target. But no matter what's your background of doing this design work, you always have to remember that the aim should be that any activity that is not producing any value to the customers, it should be removed from the service journey or from the customer journey, because the aim of the service is to provide the customer with some help or benefits. Basically, this picture is about the same matter. So as I said, you always basically start from the customer's point of view, but you also have to take service provider's perspective into account. In service design, we oftentimes talk about co-design, which means that you include these both parties in the design process. And it's believed that if these two partners work together, you can create some new ideas and concepts due to which you can create successful customer experiences and then successful services. But of course, as I said, you always have to remember this profitability aspect. So even though you want to produce value for the customer, of course, you also have to produce some value for yourself as a business. Here are some little definitions. What is service design about? I think this pretty much tells you what is it about. So if you have two coffee shops that are selling the same coffee, for instance, and same price, service design or service elements, they in the end define that into which cafeteria you want to go. Of course, everybody has their own taste and what they like, but of course, if the service is executed in a nice way, in a nice atmosphere with like friendly staff, nicely done menus, nice flavors of coffee and so on, it might be a better experience than going into a cafeteria like this, even if they were selling the same basic product. But this is just an example of what we are basically dealing with. Here's another definition, but perhaps we can skip this. anyway, next I'm going to tell you a little bit about the history of service design and where did this ideology come from. If we think design as a field of study, we of course know that there are many different disciplines within the design field. We have some long-established practices like industrial design, graphic design, spatial design. Some practices that have been evolving during the past decades and maybe during the last century. So for instance, industrial design and industrial design, it was developed as we started to mass manufacture things. So we needed some design principles to design the products that are being produced. But during the past decades, we have started to have some new technology. So because of that, we also have some new newcomers in the design field. So for instance, information architecture, user experience design, interaction design, and so on. And also service design at the same time. I think service design is not directly related to this technology thing, but anyway, it has been coming into existence at the same time. Of course, we also have some other fields that are investigating rather similar issues to service design. As I said, I'm personally from marketing, so in marketing we have fields of service marketing and digital marketing and consumer research, for instance, where we study service management, service experience, customer experience related matters. So we are basically interested about the same thing, but from a little bit different perspective. At this point, I have to say that service experience and customer experience, I might be using both terms, but basically they mean the same thing. So different researchers, they talk about service experience, and others, they talk about customer experience. But basically when somebody tells you about service experience, it's always customer's experience on service. So basically the same thing. But if you ask somebody, what is service design actually? You can get like multiple answers. Some see it as a perspective. It can also be a method. To some, it's a tool set. Others, they define it as a field of design or an academic discipline. We also have many similar concepts like design thinking, service design thinking, customer-centric innovation. So many names to this rather same thing. But service designers, they normally argue that it doesn't matter what you call it as long as you do it. So it doesn't matter what name you are using. Service design has been around for, I would say, around 20 years. But of course, this also depends who you ask. But if I say around 20 years, I don't go very much wrong. During these years, it has started to rise from a like rather niche design discipline to this more comprehensive and accessible way to tackle customer, business, and organizational challenges. And today, I think service design is in Finland at least rather maybe trendy. Phenomenon, so people are talking about it a lot. And I think service designers at the moment, they get employed pretty well. In Finland, you can study service design, for instance, in the University of Lapland and also in Lahti. So, and of course, there are multiple trainings if you are interested. But however, I think there's still much more to done. So I think many companies, they still under-recognize and undervalue this way of working. I personally see this as a perspective, like a way of doing something, a way of improving companies' actions or activities, for instance. So at this point, I'm assuming that you might be more familiar with the UX concept in this class. So I thought you might wonder what's the difference between service design and UX, for instance. Here's one perspective. As we know, user experience design is more about developing the experiences in a digital context. And normally it might focus on the on-screen user experiences with different applications or appliances such as phones and tablets and so on. But in service design, we are actually interested about the on-screen and off-screen experiences. So basically, service design can include anything, anything in this world. service design is also interested about the interactions that happen during the entire customer journey. So, including, I will show you the customer journey mapping things later on. So maybe I will explain this at a later point on. But to keep it short, I personally see that UX is a part of service design. It's one aspect that you can do service design with. But maybe somebody might have a different opinion. These are, of course, matters of opinion in some cases also. Then you might also think that what's the difference between marketing and service design? As I said, both are interested basically about the customer experience. But in marketing, we have been traditionally interested about the experience as an outcome, how customers react to some service or what's the quality of the experience or how satisfied customers are with some service. But in service design, we are providing the blocks for producing the experience. So we are interested about this part, how to kind of build the experience. But all together, I think these fields are all the time coming together. So there are many themes that they are both studying. But this is the old-fashioned way to separate these things. Here's another picture about this topic. So here on the top, there are some tools or approaches that service design is using in order to produce the certain customer experience. And here are some tools that marketing is using to measure the outcomes. We have been using tools such as Net Promoter Score or something like that, where you measure the how likely somebody is to recommend your service to somebody else. So these are rather simple tools, these measurements. And of course, you can always argue that what do these actually tell you about the service? Okay, so you might end up knowing that somebody may not recommend this, but you may not know that why do they not want to recommend your service. So but basically, if you combine these two aspects, then you might find something interesting. But these outcome measurements, maybe not alone, they are not so, in my opinion, a good way to approach a service. But anyway, why do we need this service design? aspect today. As I said earlier, service design is responding to some changes in our world. If you think back, for instance, 100 years and think our country, what it used to be like in the beginning of the 20th century, so it's very different than where we are living at the moment. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about these economic, social, and technological changes that are kind of making service design important. So, as I said, especially the Western economies, they have changed from agriculture to producing services and experiences during the last years, 100 last years especially. This is a global trend. And at the moment, services, they comprise around 20 to 80% of the economies of mature countries. And these numbers are also growing quite rapidly. So service design has been invented to respond to this trend and to these changes in the environment where we are living. If you think about Finland, for instance, what we were 100 years ago, most of the people, they were living in the countryside and they were producing their own food and goods. And basically, they probably not, they were not using any services. But at the moment, we are all the time moving towards Helsinki area, for instance, and buying more and more services all the time, and we are not so much producers of our own goods anymore. So the circumstances have changed in this matter. So of course, if you think about the social changes that have come along the way, you can say that consumers, they are expecting more today as they were, for instance, 100 years ago, and they value their rights. We are very, I would say we are kind of picky today, so we are not, we demand for good service or good products, and if we don't get those, we complain or at least change the service provider. So in a sense, market economies, they have trained us to expect more. And before, people might be okay with ideas like one size fits all and you get what you're given, but today maybe not so much anymore. If you think about your grandma or maybe even parents, maybe you can know this, that perhaps you have different expectations or you are different kinds of consumers. I don't know if you are, but most likely there is something different. At least I could say that I'm very different from my own parents and especially from my grandparents. And of course, this has something to do with wealth also. The older generations, they have been building up our country, for instance, and they were used to poorness and so on. So, but today we have so much everything that we are also expecting more. So services, they need to provide some value and meet these expectations of customers. And in order to do that, of course, you have to understand the consumer base and customers. Of course, as I said, we have more alternatives, so we have plenty of stuff where to choose from, and we can also gather information and share information with peers. Here's an example. I was traveling a few weeks ago, and then I ended up in a grocery store that didn't have price tags at all. So basically, you had to go to the cashier to ask how much is this Pringles or how much is this juice. Jews. So at this point, I started to think that, is this okay kind of service that you don't provide the customers with prices? And then I was thinking that am I just like a very spoiled customer or what? But this, in a sense, also applies to that when you are used to some level of service, then when you don't get it, you get confused. So I think in this case, the service maybe it wasn't such a good one. But yeah. Then, of course, we have some technological changes going on, and digital technologies, as which of you have been talking in this course, they have driven some radical change and disruption in service sector. So all in all, they have provided new service opportunities, but also challenges, especially to people who are not so familiar with technology. Perhaps maybe older people might be such group. But all in all, as I said before, also this technological change, it has brought consumers more services and products where to choose from. You can order your stuff wherever around the globe, and you don't have to settle for the stuff that you can find in the neighbor store. Of course, this change, it has also given more responsibility to the customers. So if you think about banking, for instance, before you used to go to the bank and the clerk was serving you face to face, but nowadays you self-serve more and more. So before we had perhaps more face-to-face interaction, like interpersonal interactions, but today it's more like electronic interaction. You are maybe interacting with a computer, and you are in charge of the situation. Before, the experience might be influenced by people for the most part. For instance, in the bank, the person who you are talking to. But today, the experience might be more influenced by some website characteristics, easiness of navigation, and things like that. And of course, these kind of things, they also drive need for service design, because you have to create new kinds of ways to serve people well. All in all, with digital services, you can, of course, always say that they age. First, some service, it might be luxury, but then it becomes a necessity. And first, it's novel, and then it becomes normal. And at the same time, the customers' expectations rise. And for instance, if you learn that you can operate, well, yes, this picture. If you could operate the ATM machine with your phone, then you start to expect that maybe you can order your food on a date with phone, and maybe use your television with the phone. So as this field emerges, you basically need service design all the time to keep up with this space, so that you can provide services that are meeting the needs of the customers. Of course, there are some challenges. Some argue that companies, they still have this technology-first attitude, that they are kind of so in love with their technology that they push it to the market rather than focus on the real needs of the people. But I don't know if this goes like this, but some argue that it goes from the company to the customer still. But of course, you should see technology as a way to deliver fantastic customer experiences and an interface to facilitate value to the customers. And you always have to remember what's the reason somebody is using some application, for instance. Nobody wants an application, for instance, that can call like various tax companies, but they don't want that, but in the end they want a safe ride to home. So you always have to remember the person behind the service or technology you are providing, if we think this from the service design perspective. here are a few principles what you should remember when you're doing technology-driven service design. So as I said, you always should remember the needs of the individuals. So technology should be seen as an enabler. It should not be a driver of a service. Technology should also be pulled into a service design rather than pushed into it. So the wrong way to approach is to push some technology to some service by force. That probably will not work, but or might work, I don't know. And of course, the design should be flexible enough and agile enough so you can meet the challenges that come with the environment that is changing all the time. But of course, with services, you always have to remember that they are always complex, and at least today, they are increasingly being produced with multiple partners and networks of actors. So it might be quite challenging to provide a nice and smooth customer experience because there are so many contributors to the experience. For instance, in healthcare, there might be some firms who provide the technology and then you have the staff in the hospital. And it's like a huge network of actors. and of course, when you have multiple actors, it's a challenge that how can you make these all actors meet the same criteria and provide like a congruence in different channels so that the service appears similar to the customer, no matter who is actually providing it in the background. Yeah, but those are something that you should remember when talking about services. Why do we need it, and why do we need service design? Then few words about the service design as a process. This is like we are now moving towards the practical part of this lecture. So as I said, service design basically adapts a mindset and workflow of a design process. If you think that previously you were designing this kind of chair, for instance, of course, before you can design a chair, you have to understand something about who's using the chair, what size are people, and how do they sit. So you basically have to know something about the anatomy of the customers in that case. After that, you have to, I think you would make some kind of 3D model where you have all the parts for the chair, and then you would make assemblies and put it together in a sense and model it, and then you might produce a prototype. So this same kind of logic, it also applies to services. So you have to somehow make it visible before you can produce it, and you have to understand the potential users before you can design the service. As I said, service design, it borrows tools from different fields, from marketing, for instance, or user experience. What else? Mostly it uses qualitative methods to explore how and why because we are aiming to understand. And of course, you always have to remember that service design is about designing with people, not only for them. So you should include the possible users to the design process. There are many kinds of maps. If you Google service design process, you will find some arrows like this, and they have some faces here. But normally they follow this quite similar approach. So in the beginning, you need to have some kind of idea what's the challenge or problem you are solving. And after that, you can start to think about how should we approach this challenge. For instance, in this university, we might have a challenge that people, they don't like to come to the lectures. So the staff might have this kind of service design problem. After that, you start to interpret and synthesize, like doing research behind the problem. So you get to know the context, who are the customers or the potential customers, what are they like, what problems do they have. So in this case of this lecture, you might start maybe observing new students, or you could interview students, or any kind of knowledge that you can gather of the group of your customers. So you can understand and maybe find reasons for why people don't like to come to the lecture. And after you do this background work, you can start creating some ideas of how to solve this problem. At this point, you normally have some workshops and you do some mindstorming and something like that. So basically, you produce tons of different ideas of which you then later on pick few to test. And at this phase, you can do this opportunity mapping or idea mapping, of course, from the service provider perspective, that what can we actually do, and of course from the customer perspective, that what should we do. So here at the university, we might have a workshop with 50 teachers, and then we would gather some ideas how can we make students to come to the class, and then maybe group the ideas, and then pick for instance three that we can test here at the university. So at this point, we would be in this experiment stage. So we might have idea that, okay, we can provide some free coffee in the lecture, for instance. That would be one experiment, and see if we market that idea to the students and so on, and then we could see that, okay, does this work, for instance. Or then we could have a lecture in some very weird place or something like that. But basic idea is that you should somehow test your idea, that does it work. And of course, after testing, you don't end there, but of course, you try to make this solution even better. So maybe you have the first solution, and then you evolve it. You keep on tracking it and then try to make it even better. There are many different kinds of maps about this same process. This double diamond design process model, this is quite familiar, so and often used. The idea is basically the same, but it's a little bit, I think this looks a bit more fancy. Fancy, and of course here you have these iterative arrows, that the design process, it normally never goes like so straightforward as in this picture, but of course sometimes you have to return to the previous phases and do it again, and maybe gather some more information, and of course the thing with this is that you cannot never be sure what the next stage will bring you, so you have to be able to live this with this uncertainty factor. But anyway, this is how it normally goes. And these don't necessarily have to be long processes. They can sometimes take a few days and sometimes maybe 3 months or 6 months. But the idea is to produce some ideas quickly and then test them and try to make them better. Here's another picture of the design process. So I think this maybe describes it a little bit better. So first you have a big mess, and you don't know what to do. And then as the process goes on, your ideas start to get a bit clearer at the same time. I have a small video here, but maybe we have to skip this today since we are a little bit over time. Before we move to the design tools and methods, maybe we could have like a 5 minute social media break, or if you need to go to the restroom, so, or you can talk for a little while, but let's have a slight break. I'll be back in a few minutes. All right. Can you still hear me? I guess so. Are we missing a lot of people? Maybe some? Well, maybe I'll start talking so we can finish the slides. So in this part, I will show you some basic service design tools and methods. Of course, there are tons of tools that you can use, but I will show you the most common ones. So basically, in this field, we talk about methods, which are kind of the procedures to accomplish or approach something. Like in research, we have qualitative and quantitative methods. So the idea is similar. It's like an approach to something. But in service design, these methods are oftentimes qualitative, as we want to understand people. We are not so much interested about measuring some effects. Maybe in the latter part of service design, when you have some prototype or something and you want to test how people reacted, maybe in that case you can use some quantitative methods, but for the most part, qualitative, such as interviewing and observation. Of course, if you interview some people about a certain matter, they might lie to you. So oftentimes it's good to observe people and see what they are actually doing, how they are behaving. So if you have that kind of information, you can be sure that it's actually happening what you're seeing, and somebody is not just telling you something that, okay, I eat only healthy food, but if you go and see what they are actually having in their fridge, they might have, like, I don't know, sausage and something like that. And then also we have tons of tools which are concrete models and templates. And also you can use this and find these tools from the internet. There are like tons of ready-made platforms where you can do this design things. Some common ones are personas, journey maps, storyboards, and service blueprints, for instance. Here's one example. This is from the Touchpoint magazine. There was an article about how to do service design, and these were the tools that were presented in that article. So this is one person's interpretation of what do you need. But I will tell you about the customer journey maps, blueprints, personas, and empathy mapping. If you know these tools, you can get started with service design pretty well. And of course, these tools, they can be used for improving old services or creating new services. And I will go through the basic ideas of these tools. Here's a little description of how you could perhaps use these tools within your service design project. Of course, first, as I told you, you have to have some problem or something that needs to be solved or made better. After that, you might collect some background information about this problem. After you have some information, you would be perhaps able to define these personas that I'm going to tell you about. After you have the personas, you could define some customer journeys for these personas, and then create the service blueprint, which tells you more about how the service might be executed. Then you could create some kind of proto of your service, some kind of test, and then, of course, test it and then improve it and repeat these steps. But it could go like this. There are, of course, multiple options for this as well. But okay, we can start with personas. And what are those? So personas are profiles that present a particular group of people. This can be customers, users, a market segment, or employees, for instance. Whatever is an important group to your research question or your problem that you are trying to solve. You have to remember with personas that they are not stereotypes, which means that, okay, you have some assumptions. For instance, there's the picture of the golf player. We all have some assumptions about golf players, that, okay, they wear these kind of clothes and they always tell you that they are playing golf and so on. So that should not be the starting point with this, but it should be based on real findings, that you actually have some facts to support your persona. But the idea with these personas is that this one persona represents a larger group of people. For instance, one type of consumer that will be using your service. These personas, they might have shared needs or behavior patterns or whatever you choose to be relevant for your service. But of course, with these, you also have to remember that you have to check these on a regular basis. So if you create these personas maybe once in 10 years, they might not be valid anymore after the time passes. Here's an example of one persona card. You normally make some kind of graphical display of this person. In this case, there's an image that represents the person. You can also use some like some more neutral picture here if you don't want to people think that, okay, this is a female with maybe some Hispanic background and so on. But of course, this you have to kind of figure out what is reasonable for in terms of your service. Then these personal cards, they normally have some like basic information about the person. For instance, this person is married and has one son, and she's Spanish and works at the railway company. So basically, you are trying to describe a group of people in a rather simple way. Then there's this quiet, which in this case tells about her attitudes or what she likes the most. And this the idea of this that you can emphasize with this person rather easy. Then there might be some images about the things that this person likes doing, or and basically these illustrate the environment or behavior or goals or motivations of this person. And then in the end, here's this description part, which gives you some details about the person and some details that are important in terms of your service. You can also support these personas with some statistics, but that might be rather challenging sometimes. But of course, if you can somehow find some supporting statistics, you can do it. Like, okay, like 24% of our customers are like this, or that could be like this, or you have to make or use your own brain. Kind of what is relevant to your service in this matter. So what could you do with this? So if you're designing a service or you are trying to make an existing service better, you might create maybe two or three or four different kinds of personas, which represent a particular group, and then after that you could start thinking that how can we provide value to this group. Of course, this applies, for instance, if you're planning marketing or whatever you are trying to sell to some people, it's always useful to try to understand the different groups of people. Of course, in marketing, we have been doing segmentations for decades, but this is different in a sense that it makes these people more like maybe human. They are not just numbers, like in the traditional marketing thinking, in some level at least. here are some other examples of how to do this. They can be rather simple, and of course you have to think about the level of details when you think about your own problem. What do you actually need to know? Do you need to understand the behaviors and needs and goals, or for instance, where you can find this person, or is this relevant information for you? Here's also another example. This is actually a canvas that you can use if you like this. But here, this is rather simple, I think. This is the Toyota driver, and this could be made for some car company, for instance, selling cars, and they are making profiles of their car, potential car buyers. So first there's this Toyota driver, and what is this Toyota driver like? And then there's also Tesla driver, and based on these you could start to think about how to serve this Tesla driver or Toyota driver in a different way. They may not require some different service, but anyway. Some people, they call these empathy maps. I don't know whether you should call empathy maps or personas. It's particularly, I think it's about the same thing. So, but as we have tons of tools, they sometimes have different names. So here's another empathy map. So here you describe the tasks, feelings, pain points, overall goal, or influences of this particular persona. So why should you use these kinds of approaches? Of course, if you are able to visualize the potential customer or user, it's easier to understand for different stakeholder groups. For instance, if you're designing a service, there might be people from like engineers and marketing people, and then some designers. So if you are able to create some like visible personas, it's easier for all these different streams to kind of familiarize with this particular group. So it's easier to understand. And of course, you can later on use these if you do like very fast persona descriptions. You can develop these into for instance, descriptions about the company's target groups or something like that. yeah, and as I said, these help into getting on the same page with different groups of people working with the service. All right, then I have this journey maps, which is another commonly used tool. So idea behind these journey maps is that they visualize the experience of a person over time, step by step. These show typical or particularly interesting instances of service experience. So the idea of this is that, of course, you cannot, if you have like 100,000 users for your service, you cannot map all the customer journey maps, but you can try to map the most typical ones that might occur when they use your service. And there are tons of ways of doing this as well. But basically with these customer journey maps, you always have some kind of timeline with start and end point. And then you picture the steps or phases, what happens, to the customer during this journey. So the basic idea is very simple with these. Of course, it depends on your research topic or problem, that what's the scope of your journey. Do you want to focus, for instance, to this section when the main encounters take place? For instance, if you go to a let's say housing fair event, do you want to focus to the time when the people is actually at the fair browsing the houses, or do you also want to study what's happening before the person goes to the fair? She or he maybe surfs in the internet and finds some information, and only after that she comes to the fair, and after that she goes away. So you have to pick your scale in that sense. But of course, service providers, they have been traditionally most interested of this during part, that what is actually happening when the customer is using actively the service. But in order to understand the whole process, of course, you should see the bigger picture. And for instance, what makes the customer to choose your service in the first place. Here's one example how you could do this. As you see, this is rather simple. Example, it's about buying a cell phone. So, but with this map, you see that here are the different channels with whom the customer is interacting. And actually, what you see from this map is that the customer is not actually interacting with the cell phone seller that much, maybe. But there are other stakeholders also also within the process. And in this process, this is pictured from the need to the recommend stage. So this represents the whole journey in that sense. But of course, if you were particularly interested about this part, for instance, then you could make another map about this. What happens when he or she goes to the retail store, and then you would have maybe 200 faces, or I don't know, it depending how detailed you want to be. You can also add some pictures to make these customer journeys more easily understandable. So some people like to call these storyboards, but I think this is a customer journey map anyway. So for instance, this represents the main phases, that what happens when somebody goes to a surgery. And of course, these kinds of visualizations, they can also be provided to the end users. If somebody's coming to the surgery, you can also give this kind of map to that person, and then they will know what is about to happen. But mostly these are design tools that make the service visible to the ones who are providing the service, so they get some common understanding about the matter. So, as I said, this can be executed many ways with various scopes and scales. And you have to remember that these are like any other maps. So you decide the level of zooming based your design problem. So what do you need to know in order to make your service better? I have one example here. I can go through this very quickly. If, for instance, Paul is driving from Sydney to Melbourne, if you look it from the distance, it seems rather simple. He hops into a car, and then he drives, and he arrives in Melbourne. So there are basically three steps. but if you zoom in the map, you start noticing that, okay, there might be two different options that he might use. And okay, let's say that he chooses this Pacific Pacific Highway here. And okay, when we zoom there, we start to get more faces here. And notice that, okay, he actually stops at Eden and then at the lakes in trance. And then if we zoom to this Eden part, there comes even more details available. So we notice that he's doing actually many things while he's at Eden before he continues his trip. He goes to the museum and to the store and spends the night and search for some accommodation and so on. So the customer journey starts to look a bit more complicated. But all in all, this was just a demonstration that here is the very large scale presentation, then a little bit more detailed and even more detailed. And of course, we could continue this more and more to better understand the Paul's customer journey in this case. I would, if you are designing a service, maybe it's useful first to see the big picture, and then when you understand that, you can start focusing on the most relevant points, perhaps, and what needs to be done first. What's the critical point of this journey, for instance? Of course, along with these customer journey maps, you can do, or you should do some like emotional maps. You might have some like plus and minus scale here, and then you might have some line that describes Paul's emotions during this journey, and then you could perhaps find the most positive parts of the journey and the most negative parts of the journey. And some people argue that you should have some kind of dramatic arc during the service usage, that you have some high points, like in a movie, you have some high points, and in the end you have some like major, something super happens to the customer, and then afterwards the service experience maybe cools down a little bit. I didn't include that in this presentation, but maybe next time it's a rather I think interesting view, but I thought we don't have enough time for that in this case. Here's one more slide about this zoomability. So, for instance, a 30-year mortgage loan, you can focus on the whole 30-year experience, or then you can look at the experience during the first year, or even during the one consulting meeting during that journey. So the opportunities are limited in this sense. But maybe we don't go through this. This is basically same stuff that I have been already telling you about. But anyway, why should we do this? Of course, these help organizations to better see the full picture of the customer journey and from customer's perspective. Of course, also this tool facilitates the common understanding between the different stakeholders who are designing a service. So if you're able to map the customer journey, then you can start designing how to actually execute that service and where in which parts we could make the journey better. And as I said about the emotional journey also, so it would be important to be able to track the high and low moments of the journey, especially so in order to enhance the service experience or customer journey. So here's one example of a business where this customer journey thinking has been taken very seriously. Maybe you know this, or maybe you have seen these kinds of maps. These are from IKEA. If you have been to IKEA, you know that there are these routes. Basically, the whole service concept is about this, has been built around this journey. So the customer has to follow this certain route, and then he or she faces different kinds of interiors and offerings during this journey. Of course, there are some shortcuts here that if you are like more familiar with the IKEA concept, you might know this, that you can actually skip some of these. But yeah, I think most people, they probably go this whole route. And this applies to all the sections. Of course, in the warehouse section, there you can probably go where you want. But on the upper levels, you need to follow this certain journey. And I think other businesses, they are also applying this. For instance, XXL Sport, there you have to go this also some pre-planned route. And in a sense, the customer journey is the key of the whole design of the department store. And in Tiger of Copenhagen, I think also there they force you to move a like certain physical journey. Yes, oh, here's one more picture from IKEA, but here you can see the route. It's marked with the gray area, and when you follow that, you will get through that department store. So then very fast, the last tool, which is Service Blueprint, which is more detailed description of the service and how it's executed. These are usually built on customer journey maps. So first you have to have the customer journey maps and the stages, and after that you can start producing information about how those certain steps might be produced by the service company. So in these maps, they help you to design the service elements during the journey. And of course, you can also use this tool for describing the existing service, or of course, planning new services as well. Here's one example of Service Blueprint. I'm not sure if you can see this, but basically, before I was telling you about the customer journey, so here are the phases, what happens to the customer. And then there's these service blueprints, they normally divide the service into front stage and backstage actions. So this front stage is those actions that are visible to the customer, what the customer sees. And then these backstage actions are something that happens in the behind the curtain, so to say, that they need to exist, but the customer is not seeing these. So based on your design problem with this map also, you can go very much into details, or then it can be like a more high level description that what is actually going on when the customer proceeds with the service, and what do you need in order to produce this kind of service. But if you Google these also, you will find tons of different examples. So, and if you want to use this kind of tool, you can maybe have a look at those, and then decide what do you need in your own case. Here's some other example. Here it's not called a customer journey, it's attendee actions. But anyway, the basic idea is same. We have the line of interaction here, and line of visibility and line of internal interaction in this case also. So what is happening in the company to support the service, like in the deeper level, even creating marketing plan and so on. So, but basically, as I said, this has been a rather short introduction to service design. After this class, I gathered some points that what should you remember about this. Of course, first, you have to remember that service design is about solving real problems that exist in the everyday life of people. It can be at home or at work also. I have been talking about customers all the time, but of course the customer of service can also be employee inside a company. So the customer doesn't always have to be the end user. So you can do this inside, we could do this inside this university, for instance, solving real problems here at the university. Customer centricity is also very important, so you start your design process from the understanding point of view. You have to understand the customers or users or potential users who will be using your service. You can use these methods to innovate for creating new services or improving existing ones. And of course, the idea in the background is that you want to make services desirable and easy to use and convenient and overall good. But also they have to be efficient and effective for the organization. So you have to be able to produce this service money-wise and so on, unless you are doing some kind of, I don't know, you just want to help people for fun. This is also a holistic, multidisciplinary and integrative field. So as I said, we are borrowing from many fields and kind of combining different aspects with various tools. So you have to always pick up the tools based on your problem. And for instance, these tools that I showed you, you could also use those in a different phases of the service process. But normally, as I saw the ideal process, it was in the end, the latter part. But maybe if you want to understand the customers, then you can also create those personas in the first place and then maybe test if they really are like that you imagined. So you have to be creative with the tools as well. And there are no, like, nobody can say that, okay, you should do this like that and not like that. So creativity is the key. Of course, you're always aiming at delivering a good experience during the whole journey. So instead of focusing a, like, single little aspect, you should always understand the bigger picture of the service and that all the service elements, they work together well from the customer's perspective. And I think the last and most important point is that services, they are never ready. So basically, you are never done. If you produce some kind of service, you cannot just dump it there and leave it for 10 years. You have to consistently try to make it better and live with the people, so to say, that you are able to meet their needs as they are evolving all the time, especially with digital services, as I said. All right, but I think this was about it, and hope you were able to get some useful information and Thank you.